This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
On your best behavior. Rule the world. You want to rule the world? You can do it with, $10 in computer parts and an 8th grade science education. Rule the world. Or at least rule your election. Rule the voting machine at your local precinct. That, according to Argonne National Lab, a new hack, a new type of hack, a new type of attack on electronic voting has been developed by the Vulnerability Assessment Team at the U.S. Department of Energy's Argonne National Laboratories. And we will be talking momentarily with one of the gentlemen on that Vulnerability Assessment Team who put this new and disturbing hack, as I wrote about it yesterday at Salon. It is one of the most disturbing e-voting machine hacks that I have seen to date, and we will discuss why that is momentarily. Welcome to the Bradcast, ladies and gentlemen. Good to have you here with us today. I am, of course, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com, drafted into duty once again here this afternoon, as I am every week, Wednesdays, 3:30 Pacific time, right here on Pacifica Radio's KPFK, live in Los Angeles. That's KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, and 99.5 up and down the Central Coast, blasting, 120,000 watts across our public airwaves. And, of course, coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. One of the things that drives me absolutely nuts this time of year, and probably for the next year or so, is the coverage of next year's presidential race, next year's elections as a whole. The media love to cover the horse race. Never mind policy. Forget about policy, what they're actually talking about. They just cover the horse race. Well, while they're covering the horse race, while they're ignoring policy, more importantly, much more important, if you ask me, than the horse race, are the track conditions for that race. You got a great horse who could win every race. Well, if the track happens to be muddy, even the greatest horse running may not be able to win that race. Such is the case when it comes to the track conditions of our election system in this country. I cover it. I've been covering it for years at bradblog.com. We cover it whenever possible right here on KPFK, certainly during my show. I want to give a shout out, some kudos to Rachel Maddow over on MSNBC. She has been doing this year so far a tremendous job of covering the Republican war on voting. And we've covered it on this show. We recently at bradblog.com, our own Ernie Canning, our legal specialist there, did a two-part series on some recent Senate hearings looking at these new laws, these new voter suppression laws that have been put in place all over the country by Republicans. And again, this is not a partisan issue, at least not to me. The fact of the matter is, it is Republican legislatures who are putting these anti-voting laws in place, whether it's photo ID restrictions at the polling place that keep people from casting their legal vote, whether it's shortening the early voting period, whether it's putting limitations on voter registration, all of these things affect the track conditions. So my shout out to Rachel Maddow for doing some great coverage of that, often night after night over on MSNBC this year. It's very nice to see. I have not seen this in In the past, in past elections. So I'm delighted she's doing that. There is, however, one piece that I'm afraid, for the moment, she too frequently misses, as do the rest of the media, and that is our voting machines, our electronic voting machines, and the secret voting, the secret vote counting that goes on with these systems, whether they're touchscreen systems, whether they're optical scan systems. But today we're going to focus specifically on touchscreen voting systems because, as I said, we have this new hack that has just been developed, and we've got the exclusive video from Argonne National Labs at bradblog.com. Also, it is posted along with my exclusive story yesterday at salon.com that you'll want to check out. You want to go into the specifics, touchscreen voting and hacks of touchscreen voting machines like Diebold, those made by Diebold, ESNS, Sequoia, in many cases by now are nothing new. We have seen these hacks before. As a matter of fact, 5 years ago, almost to the day, at salon.com, I broke the story of a hack done by Princeton, what I call the Princeton Diebold virus hack, where they were able to implant a virus onto a Diebold touchscreen machine that could flip the results of elections in such a way that there was very little possibility of it being detected, and that was done by actually changing the software on those voting machines. Well, this new hack is somewhat different, and I'll explain that in a moment, but we still continue, by the way, out here in California. I know a lot of people listening in Los Angeles, they think, oh, well, we've got optical scan. We've got paper ballots. No problems there. Well, think again. A couple of years ago when I tried to vote on L.A. County's ESNS IncaVote system, it ended up misprinting because we use for disabled voters an audio system that will actually print out your ballot, print out your votes. It actually misprinted 4 out of 12 of my own votes in a national election. A few weeks ago, over the summer, I went out to the Orange County Fair, and the Orange County Registrar happened to have a booth set up where they were registering voters. They also had an e-voting demo. They used the Hart InterCivic direct recording electronic voting system. It's not a touchscreen. It's almost like a touchscreen, but instead of touching the screen, you use a little cursor at the bottom of the screen to make your selections. Well, guess what? One of my votes seems to have disappeared as I was doing the demo on this Hart InterCivic voting system, and no one at the Orange County Registrar's office has been able to explain to me why it happened or what happened. Now, clearly nobody was trying to game my vote at this demo at the Orange County Fair. This was some sort of malfunction. But there are bad guys out there who are interested not just in malfunction, but in actual manipulation of our election system, of our electronic voting system. And when you're using touchscreen voting machines, or they're called DREs, direct recording electronic voting machines, they are, as I see it, 100% unverifiable votes that you are casting on those electronic machines. It's impossible, strictly impossible after an election to prove that any vote has ever been recorded accurately on one of those touchscreen or DRE systems. Without going into those details for the moment, I want to get to this new hack. And I'm joined, delighted to be joined today by Dr. Roger Johnston, Ph.D. of the Vulnerability Assessment Team at Argonne National Laboratories in DuPage County, Illinois. Oh, and I've heard some from some folks out in DuPage County who have some serious concerns about their election commission out there. We'll see if we have time for that, or we'll hold that for another day. But hey, if you're listening out there in DuPage County, Illinois, be very concerned about the touchscreen voting systems you are forced to use and the election commission out there who forces you to do so. So, joined by Dr. Roger Johnston, as I say, from Argonne National Labs. Welcome, sir, to KPFK.
Good afternoon, Brad.
Delighted to have you on. Thank you for the work that you've done. And as I say, people can look at the video and see the specifics of this new hack of a Diebold touchscreen voting machine. But before I get into the specifics of that hack, Roger, please give me an idea. I know that Argonne National Labs and the vulnerability assessment team that you work with there spends much more of its time, rather than dealing with e-voting, dealing with issues of things like nuclear safety and anti- proliferation. Am I correct there? Can you give me an idea of what you're doing when you're not having fun with hacking e-voting systems?
Yeah, e-voting systems are kind of a hobby of ours. Mostly we are chartered with looking at the physical security issues associated with quite a wide range of different kinds of physical security devices, systems, and programs. So we look at, for example, at nuclear non-proliferation approaches. We look at counterintelligence, various kinds of national security issues. We look at product counterfeiting, at cargo security, and actually quite a wide range of different types of security applications.
Okay, so suffice to say, no disrespect intended to these guys, but you're not basement hackers living with in your basement, not part of Anonymous, so to speak. You guys are the real deal. You guys do this for a living, computer scientists and security experts, looking at these issues and giving the warnings that we're going to talk about here. So, Roger, give me an idea. Explain this new hack of a Diebold touchscreen machine and explain how it is different from the various cyber attacks that we have seen in the past.
Well, we see a lot with physical security devices and systems that people tend to get excited about high-tech attacks and often cyber-based attacks, where you're going after the computer or the microprocessor or the network or maybe the computer ports. And indeed, those kinds of attacks usually work, but they're typically more complicated, more expensive, more difficult to pull off than is really necessary. Often very low-tech types of attacks are really the most effective, even against very sophisticated high-tech types of security devices, systems, and programs. So we got to looking a little bit at what people had done with electronic voting machines, and we realized that a lot of the people looking at them were computer scientists or computer hackers. And I think it's a little bit of a situation where when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. We don't disagree with these people that mm-hmm. these cyber attacks are potentially very effective. We just think that, unfortunately, that's not the whole story, that there are actually, in many cases, much simpler kinds of attacks. And so what we wanted to do is demonstrate one of them that's really more of a physical or electronic attack, where you really don't have to understand what the computer or the microprocessor in the voting machine is doing in order to basically tamper with the voting results.
And so, in other words, you don't have to have any advanced knowledge for this particular hack, and you call this a man-in-the-middle attack, or rather a microprocessor-in-the-middle attack. You don't have to have any advanced knowledge of the actual source code for these voting systems. This is purely a physical manipulation of voting results?
Yes, actually, we didn't, for the two machines, two different kinds of machines we've demonstrated this attack on, we didn't have the owner's manual or circuit diagrams or anything of that sort, nor did we even worry about the software or the firmware code, the instructions that run the computer or mm-hmm. the microprocessor. We simply did something that's actually much more simple, which is to interfere with the communications from the voter to the smarts of the machine.
And this is done by, and this is incredible, this is the thing that I think has raised a lot of eyebrows here. It was done by $10, a $10 computer chip that was inserted into the motherboard, and $10.50 retail, and for another $15 more, you can add a remote control, a radio frequency remote control to this chip, allowing you to effectively take over the touchscreen machine entirely for all of $26 in parts, and as I believe it was your partner in the video, John Warner says, requiring no more than an eighth grade science lab education. Correct?
Yeah, the remote control is sort of a fun thing and allows us to control the buttons that would be pushed remotely. That's not really necessary for the attack.
You got a crazy idea of fun, Roger, but I take your point.
But it kind of demonstrates that there's not a lot of security in these machines. But more practically, the use for the remote control would typically simply to be to turn the cheating on and off. Mm-hmm. You potentially would want to turn the cheating off at the end of the election so that if anybody went to test the machine, then they wouldn't be able to determine that it's not operating properly.
And so now to affect this hack, whether you use the remote control or not, you've got the $10.50 chip essentially that you pop open the machine, you put it between essentially between the voter and the main circuit board so that you intercept the touchscreen selections on the voting machine. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, if the voter votes for our candidate, we leave communications to the microprocessor or computer alone, but if he or she votes for the candidate we don't want, we flip the vote. So we essentially sit and listen, pass things through as we want, but interfere or tamper with the data when that's to our benefit.
Now, to do this, you have to get access to these voting machines. And, of course, election officials will tell you that there's no way to. As a matter of fact, we had a critic stop by bradblog.com this morning, an election official down in Georgia, who says, this is impossible. Those were his words. Impossible, because you'd have to have access to these voting systems, which you could never do. You would get caught. He actually went on to say the fellow's name was Bob Kennedy from Fulton County, Georgia. He actually says that the machines are not, as you say, Roger Johnston, left unattended for days and weeks prior to the election. He says, in fact, they are delivered on Sunday for the Tuesday election at the polling place, and you wouldn't be able to get to them. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the video on the web pages you mentioned for in the case of the Diebold TS voting machine shows it just takes a few seconds essentially to plug in our alien electronics. Conveniently, everything's on a ribbon cable with quick disconnect connectors, so it's very easy to swap in our electronics. And if we want, take them out later, but that isn't necessary.
No, you mean ribbon cables like the generic cables that people will see if they open up their PC, as opposed to being soldered on onto the circuit board in a proprietary way. These are sort of generic ribbon cables. You can go out to Fry's Electronics and get the parts needed that will fit into these voting machines.
Right. Now, in the case of the Diebold, it isn't really necessary to open the machine up. It's a lot easier if you do. But actually, we demonstrate in the video, that, or at least discuss, that you can actually get in through, in one case, an existing opening in the machine. In another case, you do have to kind of machine or file out one of the connectors and then do a little cosmetic repair, although since no one really checks for that, it's not clear you'd really have to do that. But you can then slide the electronics in. It takes a little bit of effort, but it's not too bad. The real problem is that even if you want to open up the machine, it's typically not much of a problem. We've done a lot of work with tamper-indicating seals, and it's clear that the way the seals are used in most election processes is simply not effective in being able to detect tampering or intrusion. So we don't see any real resistance to being able to open the machine up if you want to do that and install these electronics, or if you don't want to bother with the seals, it's still possible to slide the electronics in.
And because you'll hear from election officials that, we have these seals, we'll see if there's any problem, the seals will be violated. But in fact, these machines were not designed with seals in mind, it seems to me, and maybe you can verify from your work. It seems that any seals that are now put on these machines, plastic seals that will indicate tampering, that A, they can and have been defeated, as people have demonstrated, but B, the machines, they're afterthoughts. The machines, the cases, for whatever reason, were never designed to accommodate these seals.
Yeah, I think that's the most troubling part of our concerns, that these voting machines don't really seem to be designed with much thought at all about security issues. In many cases, election officials are essentially forced to use pressure-sensitive adhesive label seals mm-hmm. on the voting machines, and these are very ineffective types of seals, particularly the way that they're typically used. They simply can't reliably tell if someone's tampered or opened up the voting machine. The voting machines need to be designed much more carefully with the thought that locks or seals will be used in conjunction with them.
But yeah, and by the way, one way to, as I responded to this election official in Georgia, if you think the seals are going to keep you safe, he says that, oh, if the seal is broken, we'll replace the machine. Well, I've seen all kinds of seals broken during elections, and they rarely take the machines out of service or replace them. But hey, if you want to really screw up somebody's election, just break all the seals on all of the voting machines at the precinct, and they won't be able to carry out an election. But it disturbs me, of course, that security has never been an issue here. But why, Dr. Johnston, do we even need to have computers at all in our election system? Is it really necessary? I know you're not an election specialist, but while these machines could be designed to be more secure to a certain extent, is this a case of, you know, if you have a what did you say? If you have a hammer, you look for a nail. Are we using computers here in an appropriate way, or does it make more sense to just vote on paper ballot and count them with our own eyes?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I'm not sure I have the answer. It's clear cyber opens up a zillion cans of worms as to security issues.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these potential vulnerabilities certainly can be dealt with. Others are very, very challenging. I think it's a fair question to ask, should we be using computers or microprocessors? I'm not sure I know the answer. I think, you know, just as a vulnerability assessor looking at election issues, I think I could protect ballots that were done with an optical scanner where the voter fills out a big piece of paper with a pen and marks his or her choices and then takes the piece of paper over to an optical scanner that reads in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an approach that I could make more secure. I don't think it's secure now. Certainly there's many problems I see in that type of approach. But I think fundamentally it's something that might be more defendable. I'm just speculating at this point.
Well, we're speaking with Dr. Roger Johnston of the Vulnerability Assessment Team at Argonne National Laboratories. You're listening to Brad Friedman on Pacifica Radio's KPFK. Roger, you mention in your demo, and as I report at as I say at Salon.com yesterday and at Bradblog.com, that you have done something similar with not just a Diebold touchscreen, but also with a Sequoia AVC Advantage, and we link over to the demonstration on how you've done a very similar attack there. That is another direct recording electronic device, but as you just mentioned, optical scan systems with paper ballots. You mentioned that you think you can do this with most voting systems. Does that include not just touchscreen DREs, but actually optical scan tabulators? Could a similar man-in-the-middle attack as you've developed for the Diebold touchscreen, could that also be applied to an op scan system?
Yeah, I certainly think so. We haven't done it, but I'd be very surprised if it represented much of a problem.
And again, that would be a matter of what? Inserting a chip that reports that when it scans the ballot, it reports the results one way rather than what the piece of paper actually, what the paper ballot actually says?
Yes, you'd need access, physical access for potentially a few seconds to maybe a minute, but probably less than a minute. And essentially, you would be tampering then with the electronic results. In some cases, certain types of optical scanners, there's been discussion of printing things on the actual ballot, like a hash or an ID number,
mm-hmm.
And that also potentially could be tampered with. But there is real benefit to having a voter-verified paper record, and that the paper ballot is still there potentially to be used in any auditing or recount. But, of course, if no one calls for auditing or recount, then it's not of much use.
Yes, the key word there being potentially. In the case of these touchscreens, as I wrote in my report, we're talking about some 20 to 30% of all American voters next year in 2012 in the presidential election cycle will be voting on this type of system. Almost all voters in states like Georgia, Maryland, Utah, Nevada, the majority of voters in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Indiana, and Texas will all vote on this type of voting system, according to verifiedvoting.org next year. Also, voters in major municipalities such as Houston, Atlanta, Chicago, Pittsburgh will all line up on Election Day and have to use this type of voting system. Is there anything that can be done, Roger, at this late date, as we're barreling forward towards 2012, that can be done to at least mitigate the problems that you've been able to exploit with these touchscreen voting systems and even with optical scan voting systems? What would you recommend at this point before America is forced to simply trust this type of voting system next year to select the President of the United States?
Well, I think there's definitely things that can be done, and I think the single most important thing in security is not the technology or the security procedures. It's having a good security culture. It's basically being able to think about things from the perspective of the bad guy and to have everybody that's involved in the election process, including the voter, be aware of the potential vulnerabilities and keep their eyes open and be asking questions about, is that a potential problem? Oh, should I be reporting this kind of thing? It's clear that a lot of our election officials and our election judges simply don't have the information they need to do a good job with security, either physical or cyber. But they also need a certain attitude. The assumption that it's impossible to attack things is very unhelpful. That's essentially never true, in my experience, with real security devices. And in the case of voting machines, we're not talking about security devices. We're talking about things that really don't have much security built into them at all. So I think the key is really that security culture, having a healthy security culture, getting people that are involved in the elections really thinking about the security issues. That's a very powerful countermeasure. Even if you're working with tools and technologies that aren't very well designed from a security standpoint, you can still do a pretty good job in general with security. But you have to understand where the attacks are coming from, and you have to be able to look for them.
And I would add to that, however, that the greatest threat to these systems, as computer scientists, security experts I've talked to over the years, all tell me the same thing: the greatest threat comes from the insider. And you know, it is these election officials that we're hoping develop a better security culture. But in the end, they're the ones that we are forced to trust. They have the best access to these systems, and whether they're bad guys or not, whether they game the systems or not, at the end of the day, we simply don't know if they or anyone else did, and I would suggest that poses a grave threat in and of itself to our democracy. Dr. Johnson, I want to thank you for joining me here today and the work that you have been doing on electronic voting at Argonne National Laboratories at the Vulnerability Assessment Team. I'll be sitting in to guest host for Mike Malloy next week on his nationally syndicated show. I want to have you back for more, talk about this some more, take some calls, but really appreciate you joining us today. Dr. Roger Johnson, Vulnerability Assessment Team at Argonne National Laboratories. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
We will talk again soon. Okay, to get more on this remarkable, chilling new hack, check out the video at bradblog.com or my complete report at salon.com. As I said, we're going to be talking more about this and solutions to it in the very near future. So please do join us next week, same Brad time, same Brad channel, for the Bradcast and for the Mike Malloy Show. Until then, you can find me at bradblog.com or on the Twitters at TheBradBlog. My thanks today to producer Desi Doyen, engineer Federico Garcia, and of course KPFK's Alan Minsky. Until next week, we'll see you at the blog.